read five separate verses. We'd like to begin with Matthew chapter 9, verse 2. As we read these verses, you'll be able to figure out the subject of the message. But Matthew 9, verse 2, "Behold, they brought to him," that is to Jesus, "a man sick of the palsy, lying on a bed. And Jesus, seeing their faith, said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, be of good cheer, thy sins be forgiven thee." Matthew 9, verse 22. "But Jesus turned him about, and when he saw her, he said, Daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. And the woman was made whole from that hour." Matthew chapter 14, verse 27. "But straightway Jesus spake unto them," the apostles, "saying, Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid." John chapter 16, verse 33. John 16, verse 33. "These things," he's again speaking to the apostles, the church, "I have spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world." And then in Acts chapter 23, verse 11, speaking here to Paul, "And the night following, the Lord stood by him and said, Be of good cheer, Paul, for as thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou also bear witness also at Rome." In these verses, we read that phrase, "be of good cheer," with the exception of Matthew 9, verse 22, where we read, "be of good comfort." But the Greek word that is translated comfort is the same word that is translated cheer in the other verses. So in each of these verses, there's a call from Christ that goes forth, "be of good cheer." And that'll be the subject this evening. I want to consider, first of all, the context of these words. We see these verses present five pictures. We see individuals who were fearful, very troubled. The first one we read of there in Matthew chapter 9 is a man sick of the palsy. That is, he's a paralytic. He's trembling and troubled in heart by the consciousness of sin. He's carried by his friends into the presence of Christ. The second is a woman who had been suffering for 12 years with pain, ostracism. She's struggling to reach Christ, and she too is filled with fear. The third, we find there in Matthew 14, we find a company of disciples obeying the Lord in the path of duty. Yet they find themselves in the very midst of difficulties and darkness, contrary winds, boisterous waves. They find themselves in very great danger. And they too are filled with great fear because they think that they've seen a ghost out on the stormy waters. The fourth, there in John 16, again you have the disciples. They're in the upper room. And they are brought face to face with three very disturbing facts, would be disturbing to them at that time. Those three facts were the Lord's approaching departure. And that was something that they did not understand. The second fact that Christ presented them with was the antagonism of the world toward Christ, toward his teachings, and toward them also. And then the third fact that they are presented with is their own inability, their own weakness. The fifth picture we see there in Acts chapter 23, we see Paul, a servant of God, in prison. He was rescued by a mob yesterday, but now he's threatened by a new conspiracy and troubled because it appears that his work for the Lord was coming to an end, that his work for the Lord was being greatly hindered. Again, in each of these pictures, there are individuals that are troubled, individuals that are fearful. They're all very anxious. They're all unsettled. They're all greatly distressed. But you'll notice in each of these five verses, the focus is not upon the individuals. The focus is upon Christ. The focus is upon what Christ said to these individuals. Again, back in Matthew 9, to the man sick of the palsy, Jesus said, "Son," just that very word should bring encouragement, "Son, be of good cheer." To the woman who was weary and sorrowful and tormented, filled with anguish and heartache, he said, daughter, be of good comfort. To the disciples there in Matthew 14, in the midst of the storm, there they are, terrified by the storm, afraid of what they thought they saw. And he says to them, be of good cheer, it is I. To the disciples in the upper room, what are they afraid of? They're afraid of the future. Living in a world without Jesus Christ, Christ was going to depart from them. Living in a world that hated Christ and hated his teachings and hated them as well. So they were fearful of the future, and Jesus said to them, be of good cheer. And then, of course, in Acts 23, there's Paul in prison, who again appeared greatly hindered by unfavorable circumstances. And the Lord comes to him, stands by his side, and says, be of good cheer. So in each case, the Lord challenges fear. And in each case, he issues a call for them to be something, for them to receive something. Be of good cheer. Now consider the call of Christ. When Jesus spoke these words in all five cases, they were not just passing words without any thought or feeling. Jesus never spoke just passing words without thought or feeling. When he saw the paralytic, a man who had been carried by his friends to where Jesus was, and he said, son, be of good cheer, thy sins be forgiven thee. That wasn't just something to say. That wasn't just a passing word. When the woman who had suffered grievously for 12 years of a dreadful, life-draining disease had been healed by touching the hem of his garment. Luke says in his account that after she had been healed, she came trembling. Because remember, Jesus asked, who touched me? And she came before him trembling. And it was then that Jesus said to her, "Daughter, be of good comfort." And again, that was not just a passing word. When the disciples there in Matthew 14 were on board of the ship on a storm-tossed lake, and they're in solitude and they're in darkness, and they thought they saw a ghost, and because of what they thought they saw, they became very troubled and they became panic-stricken. It was then that Jesus said, "Be of good cheer." But again, that was not merely a passing word without thought or without feeling. When Jesus spoke to the disciples there in the upper room and he looked at them, he could see fear in their eyes. He could see dread in their eyes. And he looked at them and he said, "Be of good cheer." Again, that was not just a passing word. There's Paul. He's threatened, and we see that the Lord stood by him and said, "Be of good cheer, Paul." Again, that was not just a passing word. In each case, Jesus said, "Be of good cheer." And these were words of concern. These were words of compassion. They were words that came from a sympathetic and loving heart. They were words addressed to words that addressed a present and specific need. In each case, there was a present need. In each case, there was a very specific need. And each time Jesus said those words, it addressed that specific need at that particular time. "Be of good cheer." Those were words of exhortation. He's exhorting them to do something. They're words of encouragement also. We need to hear those words. And we need to realize that these words are not empty. These words are not meaningless words. They are words of concern. Again, they are words of compassion, sympathy, and love. So they weren't merely passing words. Also, when Jesus spoke these words, he was, as always, fully aware of their circumstances, more so than they were, and that's always the case. And he was fully aware of what they needed at that particular moment. So in each case, when Jesus said, "Be of good cheer," he was not minimizing their situation. So many times, people, if you give them a verse of Scripture to try to encourage them, they get this attitude that you're minimizing their situation. Well, that's ridiculous. And Jesus was not minimizing their situations. When he said he knew more about their situation than they did. And he knew it was more serious than they thought it was. But when Jesus said to the paralytic, "Son, be of good cheer, thy sins be forgiven thee," he did not deny that the man was paralyzed. He did not minimize that the man was paralyzed. He did not deny that the man had sin. He did not minimize the man's sin. When Jesus said to the woman who had suffered for 12 years and for 12 years had been in the grip of that awful plague, and he said, "Daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole." He was not minimizing the reality of her suffering. He was not minimizing what she was feeling. And when Jesus spoke to the disciples in the storm, Jesus could have, but he didn't. He did not laugh at them because they were afraid of something that they imagined. I mean, their fear came from something that they imagined, a ghost. But he saw their fear. And he did not deny that they had fear. And he did not minimize their fear. When he said unto them, "Be of good cheer, it is I." When Jesus spoke to the apostles in the upper room, And he told them, in the world you shall have tribulation. He could see and he could sense their fear. He could see and sense their panic. And he proceeded to say what? Be of good cheer. He was not minimizing the severity of the tribulation that they would face. He was not minimizing the force of the world. He was not minimizing the lure of the world or the opposition or the hatred of the world. And when he said, in the world you shall have tribulation, be of good cheer. He wasn't minimizing what they were going to face in the future. He was telling them what they needed. He knew all about the antagonistic forces of the world, and he did not deny or minimize those forces one iota. Paul was in prison there in Acts 23. The enemies are plotting to kill him. And the Lord came into that prison and stood next to Paul and said, be of good cheer. And in so doing, he did not deny, he did not minimize Paul's experience. He did not deny or minimize the fact that there was a plot to kill Paul. He simply told Paul what he needed at that hour. Be of good cheer. Be of good cheer. Backing up to the case of the apostles in Matthew 14. Their fears and their anxiety and trouble, as often fears and anxieties and troubles do, they arose from a false perception. They saw a figure out in the sea, and they jumped to the conclusion that it was a ghost. Well, it was none other than Jesus Christ. But they had a false perception. And their false perception caused them great fear and anxiety and trouble. But that being so, it did not make what they were feeling less of a reality. What they thought they saw was not real, but their fears were real. Their anxiety was real. The troubles and the problems and the difficulties and the trials and the struggles and the needs and the perplexities and fears of God's people, wherever they come from, whether they be legitimate sources or not, wherever they come from, they're real. They're real. I mean, they may be foolish. They may have no basis. But that doesn't lessen the reality of the fears. Be of good cheer. Were words spoken in the midst of real fears and real troubles. And what Jesus was saying when he spoke those words, what he was telling them was what they needed at that hour. Wasn't minimizing, but he was telling them what they needed at that hour. So what do these words mean? What does it mean when Jesus says, be of good cheer? In each case, that is a direct and personal call. It is a present call. It is a call by the Lord Himself. Be of good cheer. Being a call from the Lord, it is therefore a call of great necessity. The Lord never tells you or calls you to do anything that is not a great necessity. So when he said, be of good cheer, he was calling them, what he was calling them to do or to be was a necessity. And it was of tremendous importance. Be of good cheer. That word be shows that it is a call to be in a certain condition. He says, be of good cheer. The word good speaks of the fact that what Christ is calling them to do, what Christ is calling us to do, is something that would be good for us spiritually. It's something that will benefit us spiritually. The Lord never calls you to do anything that is not of spiritual benefit to you, that is not for your spiritual well-being. So what he's telling them is something that is good for them, something that will benefit them, and that means that it is a call that proceeds from a gracious heart. That God would tell us to do something good for us, that's grace. It is a call that proceeds from a loving heart. In each case before us, there's a needy people. And Jesus said very plainly to each one of them, very directly, be of good cheer. We too are a needy people. And Jesus is still saying, be of good cheer. And it ought to greatly interest us, and it ought to greatly concern us, what he meant when he said to these troubled and fearful hearts, be of good cheer. So as you read those words, be of good cheer, it's very plain that there's something very hopeful in those words. There's hope in those words. There's something very encouraging in those words. But what was he saying? What was Jesus saying when he said four times, be of good cheer, and one time, be of good comfort, but again, all five times, he's saying the same thing, be of good cheer. Was he merely commanding them to be happy? Was he commanding them to be happy? Was he commanding them to be joyful? Well, certainly the Bible teaches us that we are to be happy. We are to be joyful. But I don't believe that's what Christ was calling them to do. He wasn't merely saying, be happy. Was he simply commanding them, put a smile on your face. Smile, lighten up. No, he was saying something much more. Again, in each of these cases before us, Jesus is speaking to the troubled. He's speaking to the distressed and the fearful. And what he is saying is good. Be of good cheer. Again, he's telling them to be something that would be very advantageous to them in their present situation. Something that would be very beneficial and favorable to them in their present situation. In each case, in their present situation, it was dire circumstances. But he's telling them something in their present situation that would prove to be very advantageous to them. Something that would be very useful to them. It was something that was very well suited to their circumstances. That is, it was relevant to what they were feeling. It was relevant to what they were experiencing at that very hour. Be of good cheer. He's telling them something that was very needed. This is something they needed. They needed this. Oh, we think many times we need to do this or we need to do that in order to, because of a situation, I need to get away, whatever. But here's what you need. Be of good cheer. This is what we need. This will work in every situation that you and I find ourselves in. So, the word that Jesus used when he said, be of good cheer. And when he said there in Matthew 9:22, be of good comfort, is the Greek word tharseo. And it conveys the idea of courage. Be of good courage. Now notice, he's not saying, do something courageous. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, be of good courage. Or be of courage, and this will be good for you in your present situation. Nor is he merely saying, put on a brave face. Because you can do that. I mean, you can do something courageous. You can put on a brave face, but guess what? At the end of the day, you're not going to feel indifferent. The fear and trouble are still there. When all your activity ceases, the fear and the trouble is still there. So that's not what Jesus was saying. He's not saying, do something courageous. He's not saying, put on a brave face. But Jesus is speaking of something that I believe would take away the fear. It is the same back again in Matthew 9 verse 22 when he said, be of good comfort. What is comfort? When you think of comfort, because again it's the same word that's translated cheer. Be of good comfort. Well, when you're comfortable, there's tranquility. There's assurance. You go to bed tonight and you're pretty sure that someone's sneaking around your house, you're not going to sleep very comfortably. You need to have assurance. You need to have tranquility. You need to know that everything's okay. That everything is okay. When Jesus said, be of good cheer, he's speaking of an inward force. What Jesus said to the palsied man, what he said to the woman who was been suffering for 12 years, what he said to the disciples out on the lake, and what he said to the disciples in the upper room, and what he said to Paul, is something that is suggestive of strength. Be of good courage. Strength. It's that which will inspire us. It's that which will give us reason to have cheer, to have cheerfulness, happiness. In each case, the Lord was saying, be not afraid. Be of good courage. Be of good cheer. Be of good courage. That coincides with the same phrase in the Old Testament we read 16 times. Be of good courage. 16 times in the Old Testament. Be of good courage. That's what Jesus is saying here. Be of good courage. It is a call that also coincides with fear not. Found 63 times in the Old Testament. And almost every single time when you read those words, fear not, following it is for I. Drawing our attention to God. Drawing our attention to the reason why we should not fear. 63 times, fear not. It also coincides with that phrase, be not afraid, which is the same as fear not. But be not afraid occurs 26 times in the Old Testament. So what Jesus is telling them is to be of good comfort, to have tranquility, to have assurance, not to fear, not to be afraid. It is a call to a freedom from fear. It is a call to an absolute tranquility and assurance of safety. Again, it's a very necessary call. Because fear is real. Not only is fear real, but fear is very destructive. Can be. Fear is debilitating. Fear will cloud your minds and make it very difficult to think rationally. Why do you think so many times, say one of us, or say somebody, you're driving your car, you hit a child on a bicycle, you see them laying there in the street. Why is it that so many people take off? Is it because they intended to hit that person? No, I doubt it. It's because they're afraid. And fear takes over. And now they don't think clearly. And the first thought that comes to their mind is flee. Fear will rob you of the ability to think correctly. And that's why it's important what Jesus is saying here is, be not afraid. Be of good courage. Fear will cause you to fail spiritually. Fear will rob you of joy. I don't know too many people that are fearful that are joyful. Fear will rob you of joy. It'll rob you of peace. It'll rob you of assurance. So he says, be of good cheer. And he says this to, in each case, he says it to those who were fearful. Consider the sequence of these verses. First, to the paralytic, be of good cheer. Why? Because the sins are forgiven thee. You see, he always gives us a reason to be of good cheer. To the woman who was struggling and trembling, he says, be of good cheer. Why? Because all your weakness and limitation is supplied by the virtue that comes from Him. Be of good cheer. Said to the disciples on the storm-tossed lake, be of good cheer. Be of good cheer, He said, it is I. It's not a ghost. It is I. Be of good cheer. Why? Because they could be sure that out of that storm, He was there. He would emerge. He did emerge. The disciples in the upper room, be of good cheer. Why? Because I have overcome the world. And then to Paul, there's Paul, he's baffled. He feels he's being prevented and hindered from doing the Lord's work. And the Lord says to him, be of good courage. Why? The Lord told him, I have more for you to do. In other words, I have a plan for you, and nothing is going to thwart that plan. So how do we obey this call? Be of good courage. What do we do? Do we just leave here tonight and say, well, you know, that makes sense. I'm going to do that. I'm just going to be courageous from now on. Well, see how far you get. You won't get far. So how do we obey? How do we get this courage? Hang around other people that are courageous? Well, that might work while you're with them, but what happens when you leave? Or they leave? Jesus says to each of his own, be of good cheer. He calls us to be courageous, which is a call to strength. And again, the call goes forth in the very midst of trouble. It's not a call that goes forth in the midst of calmness. It's a call that goes forth in the midst of trouble and perplexities. In each case, the individuals were perplexed. It is a call that goes out in stress. In each case, the individuals were stressed. They were anxious. It is a call that goes forth in the midst of problems and difficulties and trials, and infirmities and struggles and needs and fears. In the midst of these things, Jesus says, be of good cheer. Or be of good courage. Be courageous. But how do we do that? How do I obey? When the Lord tells me to be something, that's a command. It is a command that I am to obey. How do we obey this command? Be of good courage. How do we do that? Well, we have to realize where this courage comes from. It is a courage that comes from a persuasion of who He is and what He has done. And that is brought out in each one of these five cases. The Lord draws attention to Himself. It is in the realization and firm persuasion of who the Lord is. That's where this courage is found. That's where it's found. That's how it's kept. Realizing who He is. We do not find this courage within ourselves. The paralytic, the woman with the dreadful disease, the apostles out on the lake, the apostles in the upper room, Paul, his life is threatened. They did not find this courage within themselves. Within themselves they were fearful. Within themselves they were anxious and trembling. They didn't find this courage within themselves. They did not draw courage from their circumstances. It was their circumstances that was causing the fear. It was their circumstances that was causing the anxiety. They didn't draw courage from their circumstances. Why, if you depend upon your circumstances for courage, you're not going to find, you're not going to be courageous very often. Courage is in Him. So how do we get this courage? How do we be of good courage? Well, we have to grasp and lay hold of Him. We have to grasp and lay hold of who He is. And when Jesus said on these five occasions, be of good cheer, that is what He is saying. He is saying, lay hold of me. Grasp who I am. And if you do that, you'll have this tranquility. You'll have this assurance. Why, if you're depending on circumstances, you may, once your circumstances change to be more favorable, you may feel a tranquility. But then what happens when those circumstances change? That fear is back. But if we grasp and lay hold of who He is, that's good for when circumstances are good, that's good when circumstances change. This is where courage is found. We do not find courage in what we do. We do not find courage in what we have done. We find courage in what He has done. Again, He said to the apostles in the upper room there in John 16 and 33, in the world you shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. He is reminding them, He is drawing their attention to what He has done. It's not what we have done. It's what He has done. So we need to grasp and lay hold of who He is. We need to grasp and lay hold of what He has done. We need to trust who He is. We need to trust what He has done. This is where courage is found. And that's why when you tell somebody, Trust the Lord. That's good advice. Most people don't take the too kindly. But it's good advice. Trust the Lord. That's the answer. Trust the Lord. That's where you're good. To trust is to lay hold. And that's where you find tranquility. That's where you find assurance. Again, you may find a degree of tranquility and assurance when the storm passes. But look up and you'll see out in the distance there's more clouds coming. There's another storm coming. And what's going to happen when that storm comes? You're going to be fearful because you're depending on the wrong things. This is a courage that results from the realized presence of Christ. As you go back over these five examples, it is clear that the abiding condition of courage, it is clear from the Old Testament when the Lord says, be of good courage. The abiding condition is a clear vision of the Lord. By a clear vision of the Lord, I mean a definite consciousness, a definite awareness of the Lord. When you have that, When you are conscious that the Lord is present and you are aware of who He is, there is tranquility. There is contentment. There is assurance. You see, you and I change, but He doesn't. Our love changes. Our hope changes, our faith changes, but He doesn't. Love is not the source of courage, nor is our hope or our faith, because all those change. It's Him, and He doesn't change. Real courage is found in Him. Now, when Jesus said to the paralytic, "Be of good courage," do you think that the paralytic received tranquility and assurance and strength? I think so. How did he receive it? How did he get it? He saw Jesus. He heard Jesus. And he believed what he saw and heard. And that brought tranquility and assurance. That brought courage. You think about the woman with the life-debilitating disease. After she came behind Christ and touched the hem of His garment and was immediately healed, she came trembling and falling down before Him. And Jesus said, "Daughter, be of good comfort." Be of good comfort. Did she receive tranquility? Did she receive assurance and strength? I think so. How did she get it? She saw Jesus. She heard Jesus. And she believed what she saw and heard. The result? Courage. You see, courage is a result, just like happiness is a result. It's a result. The apostles in the boat, did they receive tranquility and assurance and strength? I believe they did. How did they get it? Again, they saw Jesus. They heard Jesus. They experienced Jesus. They believed. The result, they had tranquility. They had courage. They had comfort. You go to the apostles in the upper room. Same thing. Did they receive tranquility and assurance and strength? I believe so. And how did they get it? Same way the others did. Paul, his life is threatened. And we are specifically told there that the Lord stood by him. He could feel the presence of God. He could see the presence of God. The Lord stood by him and said, "Be of good cheer." And whatever trouble of heart and whatever fear that Paul was experiencing, a tranquility and an assurance came over him. How did it come about? He felt the presence of the Lord. He heard the Lord speak to him, and he was reminded by the Lord himself. The Lord's in control. You know, you can remind somebody 100 times a week, the Lord's in control, but they're not going to get it unless the Lord reminds them. And when the Lord reminds you, when the Lord comes and puts his arm around you and stands by you and says, "I'm in control," there's peace, there's tranquility, there's courage, there's strength. So God's people, none of us, have to live in the climate of fear. And I believe that a large portion of God's people live in fear. They live in constant fear. Constant fear of the future. Constant fear. But if we look to the Lord with our eyes fastened upon him, that's why the writer of Hebrews in Hebrews 12 said, "Looking unto Jesus." That's where our strength comes from. That's where it comes from. We look unto him. Our eyes are fastened upon him. Our ears are open to his voice. See, that's our problem. We hear everything but the Lord. We hear the words of men and fail to hear the word of the Lord. The words of men will scare you to death. But the words of the Lord, there's courage. There's strength. So we need to hear him speak. We need to believe what he says. And I mean believing to the degree that it impacts the way we live. Because if it does not impact the way we live, I question whether or not we really believe. Believing to the degree that it impacts the way we live, that it impacts the way we feel. Don't you think that in each of these cases, when Jesus said, "Be of good cheer," they heard him speak those words and they felt different. They felt different. You know, a lot of times we need to repent about the way we feel. And I'm not talking about the way we feel physically. I'm talking about the way we feel mentally and spiritually. There's a lot of that that needs to be repented of, because it's wrong the way we feel many times. But when Jesus comes and he says, "Be of good comfort," that changes. Even in the midst of a storm, that changes the way you feel. We need to experience Jesus Christ. He is the courage we need. You see, he puts himself between us and all the forces of hell. And then he says to us very directly and plainly, "Don't worry. Be of good cheer. It is I." Our problem is we look beyond the one who's standing between, and all we see is the forces of hell. And we need to see the one who stands between us and hell. Us and the enemies of God. Us and our circumstances. And when we see that, you can't help but feel good. I mean, even if you don't want to feel good, you're going to feel good. You just can't help it. When you see the Lord in the midst, you will find the courage that you need. Again, we tell people all the time, we all do, nothing wrong with it. Trust the Lord. Get your eyes on the Lord. That's good advice. But again, it falls on deaf ears unless they hear the Lord say it. You can tell me all you want to, Brother Dan, don't worry. The Lord's in control. It won't mean a thing unless the Lord tells me. And when the Lord tells me, no matter if I feel like sitting under the juniper tree, I can't. Because it changes the way you feel. It changes the way you think. It changes everything. So these are wonderful words. Words that we need to hear every day. Be of good cheer. Be of good comfort. Be of good courage. And if there ever was a people who needed tranquility and assurance, it's the people that live today. We need that. It's a desperate need. And the source is Jesus Christ. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse of song.